deaths of David Palmer, Tony Almeida, and Michelle Desler. They were friends of mine.
That's the way it works.
Jack, Logan doesn't confess. How far are you actually willing to go?
As far as I have to.
Welcome to 24 Under Review, your one-stop shop for all things 24.
Now, let's rejoin our regularly scheduled podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the eighth installment of 24 Under Review, covering the hours of 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Well, it was a relatively boring episode, except towards the end, but we did get a lot of info that probably will be used towards the end of the season, but that is also why we have so many recordings from the show, so you'll definitely be hearing quite a few quotes, and I think that most, if not all of them, are definitely going to play a role in the season. Some of them just play a role in the rest of the episode, but we'll get on with things. Please go over and dig our podcast on dig.com. Also, just go to 2400view.com and click the Dig It, logo in the corner, and that'll automatically dig the podcast. So that's quite easy, and it gets us a little bit more recognition. And with that, we will get right into tonight's episode.
Previously on 24.
Wayne asks Assad to make a televised speech, telling all extremists to lay down arms, and they think that although it might work, it could actually backfire and make them support Fayyad more. Tom Lennox meets with Reed Pollock, and they talk about assassinating the president, and Reed already has a guy on the way to assassinate him, but Tom needs to give him clearance. Tom is going to the ranking Secret Service agent to let him know of Reed's plan, but Reed knocks him out, telling him that Carson wondered if he was being played the whole time or Tom just switched over the last few hours. Dmitry Gudrinko is brought into the equation when he tells Fayyad that he has delivery systems on the way, and CTU gets the location on his safe house, but no one is there. Jack surrenders to his father in exchange for Josh Bauer's life. Right as Jack is about to be executed, he turns around and his father has run away, and he goes outside and finds a PDA with a number. He calls the number, and it turns out to be ex-president Charles Logan, who says that he knows more about Gudrinko, but they will have to meet in person.
The following takes place between 4 p.m. and 5 p.m.
Gudrinko is at what appears to be a junkyard for airplanes, and then he receives a call from good old Fayyad.
Go ahead.
We're on our way to the rendezvous.
Good. We've arrived.
Is the shipment there from Nevada?
No, they are behind schedule. But I'll be here any moment.
How soon can you deploy once we arrive?
It'll take us 2 hours to assemble the delivery system and run diagnostics. Another hour to secure the payload.
That's longer than I'd hoped.
Listen, we are working with advanced technology. It can't be rushed.
Just remember, without us, you'd be delivering your payload in weeks instead of hours.
I haven't forgotten.
It seems necessary to remind you now and then. Shh. I'll be glad when we no longer have to deal with these people. They're living in the dark ages, and they act like they own the world.
I'd much rather be fighting them.
If we succeed today, we'll never have to. The Arabs and the West, they destroy each other.
After that, the ambassador from an unknown country over in the Middle East comes. He was actually the ambassador that showed up earlier in the season to talk to Wayne about if Assad was honestly thinking about laying down arms and giving up and trying to gain political power using peaceful tactics.
I believe you know Amr al-Assad.
Mr. Ambassador,
I have never met Mr. Assad in person, but I know him by reputation. His organization has carried out repeated terrorist actions against my country.
Your own policies precipitated those actions.
That's your justification for killing innocent people?
You and I define innocent in different ways.
My own deputy lost his 7-year-old son in one of your bombings. That is how I define innocent.
We are not here to air past differences.
Then why are we here, Mr. President?
In our last meeting, I informed you that we were in contact with Assad. You told me it was a positive step toward peace.
And I meant it at that time. But I must confess, after the last attack, I didn't expect to see you in the same room with him. And I'm not so sure I care to remain here either.
It is no more pleasant for me, Your Excellency.
Would you give us a moment?
Certainly.
Assad is here because of the attack. To be frank, sir, we have 3 more nuclear weapons loose in my country, in the hands of terrorists.
We didn't know that.
In less than 1 hour, Assad is going to go on national television and issue a statement. It will be a global appeal to extremists. Now, he's going to urge them to put down their arms and engage in peaceful negotiation with the West. Now, we are hoping to compel someone to come forward with any information regarding those nuclear weapons.
A petition like this, coming from Assad, it could have a profound effect.
We're counting on that.
What do you need from us?
I want a public statement of support from your prime minister, and I want it to follow right on the heels of Assad's.
Mr. Assad is a polarizing figure in my country. A public endorsement of him could have grave political consequences for the prime minister.
Then you tell your prime minister that we have a carrier group operating less than 25 miles off his shores. My advisors are pressing me hard for a military response. So if we are attacked again, I won't be able to hold them off.
This is sounding like an ultimatum, Mr. President.
It's not an ultimatum, Mr. Ambassador. I'm merely pointing out the fact that neither the Prime Minister nor I have the luxury of worrying about political consequences on a day like today. I am putting my presidency on the line, so please, stop handing me excuses. Get on the phone and make this happen.
Nadia tells Bill that the second sweep of the safe house only revealed a landline, which Morris is running an unsuccessful trace on. Jack calls Bill and tells him to set up a 5-block perimeter, or get LAPD to set up a 5-block perimeter around the Grandmont Hotel because his father escaped and he needs to be apprehended. Bill is kind of in the dark of what happened, but Jack tells him he will get a briefing when there is time. Jack then requests a helicopter, which should be there very soon, as there's one in the area. When Jack is downstairs, which is right about after he requests a helicopter, he sees Josh and Marilyn out in a plaza. Jack tells Josh that when the whole thing is over, they will sit down and have a big talk, and Jack will give him all the information. Then Marilyn thanks Jack for saving her, and he tells her that Josh reminds him of her. Back at the bunker, Carson is making his way through security. Reed when they asked what his business was, Reed interjected that because Tom Lennox needed him, and that was a little bit odd. I would have thought Secret Service might have caught on to that. They then go inside to the secret high voltage room and have this little conversation.
We're gonna have to take care of him. Make it look like a suicide.
No. Listen, eliminating President Palmer is for the good of the country, right? It's the only way to get him out of office. Killing Tom Lennox only benefits us.
We don't have any choice.
Tom Lennox is a very smart man. Now, I think that once Vice President Daniels is holding the reins and enacting the policies that Lennox himself created, we can convince him to keep quiet.
I'm not gambling my life on Lennox's good judgment.
Look, it's a risk, but it is a risk that I am willing to take. We're not cold-blooded murderers. We're just trying to save our country. Either way, we do not have time to resolve this now. Assad goes before the cameras within an hour. You said it would take 25 minutes to assemble this?
25 to 30.
Then you better get started now. If we're going to frame Assad for the assassination, then this bomb has to explode when they're both together. We're never going to have a better chance than now.
We then have our 4-minute commercial break, and when we return, Reed is in Tom's office. And we see him click send message. He walks outside, and Melinda asks him about the briefing that Tom was supposed to send to her. He then says that when she gets back to her computer, it should be there, because obviously that is what he just sent. Melinda then asks where Tom is, and Reed tells her that he is in Conference B in a meeting. She tells him that she was just in Conference B and he wasn't there, so Tom takes the easy way out, saying that, of course, they probably just moved to a different room. Back at CTU, Morris is still having troubles with tracing Rodenko's landline, and Chloe comes in to save the day. She looks at the screen and then tells Morris to change one of the fields, which is wrong. They have a little conversation, and then Morris leaves to go reset something, and Chloe looks in his PDA and finds the name of the person listed as his AA sponsor, which is Janine. And then Nadia walks in and says she doesn't know if Morris is fit to do it after being tortured, and asks where he is, and of course Chloe tells him heard that he is resetting a server port. Chloe defends Morris, telling Nadia that he is better than 90% of the techs on the floor, and then Nadia says for now it's fine, but if she sees any more, she will go to Buchanan. With that, Chloe goes and calls Janine, and it's unanswered, so she leaves a message. Jack arrives on the ranch, where he sees Logan for the first time in over a year and a half, and then the Secret Service agent is asked by Jack to leave. This conversation ensues.
It must have been hard for you to find out about your father's involvement in all of this.
I'm not here to talk about my father. Dmitry Grudenko, what do you know about him?
I know Grudenko supplied Fayette with 5 Russian tactical nukes, one of which exploded this morning in Valencia, one of which you managed to disarm, so that leaves us 3 we need to recover.
That's correct.
I get regular intelligence updates, and I still have my sources. So, you need Grudenko to find Fayette.
Can you help us?
Yes, I can.
But you want some kind of plea agreement. You're unbelievable.
I don't blame you for thinking that, Jack. But I want you to know that I'm not the same man that I was 2 years ago. Just as you're not the same man who was dragged away and thrown into a Chinese prison. I've changed. I've had time to think about what I did.
I've had time to reconnect to my faith.
So no, I don't want a pardon. And I wouldn't accept it if it was offered to me.
What do you want?
Nothing. I want to give you the information you need, with no conditions.
I'm listening.
I never dealt with Grudenko directly, but I know how we can find him.
How?
Through Anatoly Markov. He's the Russian Consul General here in Los Angeles.
CTU contacted the Consul General as soon as we saw Grudenko's name on the list. He denied any knowledge of his whereabouts.
Markov's lying. He's been the liaison for Grudenko for years.
Liaison for what?
For business concerns looking to acquire the products that Grudenko provides. Now, don't make the wrong play, Jack. If you go down official channels, you'll end up in a hopeless maze. Markov has friends in the highest levels of the Russian government. They can protect him indefinitely. If you want to access what he knows right now, you need to go through back channels.
What back channels?
Me. I'm your best chance to get the information you need in the time frame you need it.
What are you proposing?
That I speak to Markov, myself, in person.
Why would Markov talk to you?
Because I have leverage. Markov was involved in the conspiracy that put me where I am today. I didn't give him up. But he knows I still can.
I don't trust you.
If you want to find Grudenko, maybe it's time you started.
The only way for Logan to get out of the house arrest he is at is with executive orders, and of course the president is Wayne Palmer, so Jack makes the call.
Mr. President, thank you for taking my call.
You said it was urgent.
I think we have a way of finding Grudenko.
It was my understanding that
we lost Grudenko. Are you telling me we have a new lead?
Yes, sir. Mr. President, the lead is Charles Logan.
Logan?
Yes, sir, I'm with him now. He claims that his administration had dealings with Grudenko and that he has a contact that will lead us to him.
Who?
Anatoly Markov, the Russian consul in Los Angeles.
When we learned about Gradenko, Jack, I placed a call to the consulate myself. Now, that's a dead end.
Not according to Logan. He wants to meet with Markov in the consulate in person. He says that's the only way that we can get the information we need.
Jack. Logan is under house arrest.
That's why I'm calling you, Mr. President. We need an executive order granting Logan a temporary furlough.
Do you realize what you're asking me? Logan was behind the assassination of my brother.
Sir, I would not be calling if I didn't think this was necessary.
I don't trust this man, Jack. This could be some maneuver on his part to gain his freedom.
I understand, but I think we need to take a chance on him. I will enter the consulate with Logan as part of his security detail. Sir, I believe we can trust him. I think he's after something else.
And what exactly would that be?
Redemption.
Jack, I have no desire to facilitate any kind of redemption for Charles Logan.
Mr. President, right now, I think he's the only way we're going to find Gradenko and the bombs.
Put him on.
He wants to talk to you.
Hello, Mr. President.
I want to hear it from your lips. Tell me why I should agree to this.
Because you need me, Mr. President. It's as simple as that.
I can talk to the Russian consul myself.
Yes, sir, you could do that, but with all due respect, you'd be wasting your time. I have a prior relationship with Markov that we can exploit.
Again, with due respect, sir,
I have more experience dealing with people of Markov's character.
You mean criminals like yourself?
I know how he thinks, and that's an advantage you can't afford to ignore.
I want you to know that if this is some kind of move to escape custody, I will commit the resources of my administration to hunt you down.
I can assure you, Mr. President, I have nothing like that in mind. Several years ago, I was in the same situation, and I reached out to your brother for counsel. David helped me successfully navigate that crisis.
Yes, he did. And you repaid him by killing him.
I would like to do for you what your brother did for me. I would like to help you get through this.
Don't make the mistake of assuming this represents any kind of forgiveness on my part.
I understand that, Mr. President, but I hope over time to earn your forgiveness.
Put Jack on the phone.
Yes, Mr. President.
I'm granting the furlough. Just make it count, Jack.
I'll do my best. Thank you, Mr. President.
Logan then points out that it must be hard for Jack, because there's a possibility that Logan may not be the man that Jack thought he was. And then, back at the aircraft junkyard, Fayed finally shows up where Gradenko is, and Gradenko shows him what he says is a drone and mentions that the U.S. military has spent millions to develop it, and today all of the taxpayers will get to see what their money had developed. In CTU, Bill is in the conference room briefing people at CTU about what's been happening, especially what Jack knows.
I want comm locked on any communication outside and possibly inside the consulate. Morris, are you still the lead on decoding diplomatic communication leaving the consulate?
Yes.
I want you to hand that over to Chloe.
Why?
Because of what you've been through today. I'm not sure you can handle it, and we can't afford any mistakes.
Look,
Chloe. I want you to take over Morris's workload on the consulate.
Hold on a second.
It's okay, Morris.
No, it's not okay. It's not okay. I'd like to say something to everyone. I'm very sorry that I gave the reprogramming device to Fayed. If I could take it back, I would, but I can't. And if you don't think I can do my job, Mr. Buchanan, then I should leave. But I can do my job.
Okay, Morris. Give your task full priority.
Thank you.
Mr. Buchanan, I have to disagree with your decision. I'm sorry, Morris, but I just don't think you're ready.
Your objection is noted, Nadia. My decision stands.
Reed enters the high voltage room, as I like to call it, where we have Tom squirming around trying to get out unsuccessfully. Reed asks Carson if the bomb is ready, and he also mentions that people are asking a lot of questions. Reed starts second-guessing his decision to kill the president, but overcomes the fears, saying that it's just starting to sink in what they're actually going to do. Back at CTU, Nadia points out a few missing sectors in something that Morris did, but then Chloe covers for him, telling Nadia that the Pentagon doesn't want them to build those sectors. After that, she goes up to Morris and confronts him about it, telling him that she covered for him, and Nadia is not too happy. Morris says that those sectors are irrelevant and he will fill them in before he is done, but Chloe says it's not okay and he needs to fill them in as he does it because Nadia just wants to prove to Bill that she was right. Back to the ranch, Logan is watching the news and picking out the clothes he is going to wear to the consulate. And then he goes into the bathroom and recites what we later learn to be a Bible verse.
Coming out of a horrible pit, I set my feet upon a rock and established my goings. One step at a time, Charles. One step at a time.
Jack is on the phone and says it will be 45 minutes before they can get to the consulate. He also opens a Bible and sees the highlighted verse, and it is part of what Logan said. Janine finally calls Chloe back, and they have a little conversation. Chloe says she knows that Janine doesn't know her, but she's Morris's ex-wife. Janine says that she hasn't talked to Morris for 3 years. That's when she dropped out of AA. And then Chloe freaks out, looks over at Morris's desk, and he's not there. She calls the tech area, but he is not down there. Then she goes on a mission to find Morris.
Morris?
Chloe?
Morris, what are you doing in there?
Wait.
Open the door! Open the door!
What the hell is going on?
I called your sponsor, Jeannie. She said she hasn't talked to you in 3 years.
Are you out of your bleeding mind?
I trusted you. I put my job on the line for you. You lied to me.
I didn't lie to you.
Yes, you did.
I didn't lie to you. Jeannie's not my sponsor anymore. Ted is.
Ted?
Yeah, remember Ted with the hair? He's my sponsor. I called him just like I told you. Check if you want. I'll give you his number.
Not now. I don't know what to say. I was worried about you.
Marching into a men's room isn't worried. It's obsessed. Now, I appreciate your concern. I love your concern. But darling, let's take a look at what's going on in your head. It's not pretty.
Sorry.
Morris pulls out the bottle of leftover whiskey out of his pocket. And after a few seconds of thought, he pours it all out into the sink, just like I thought right when I saw him pull it out. So, not a very good, not a very early prediction, but, you know, it was quite obvious. Back at the bunker, Melinda comes into Wayne's office with the paperwork for the release of Logan. She also asks if he will be ready for a dry run of the speech in 5 minutes. Just a few hundred feet away in the high voltage room, Tom starts to cough, and then Reed comes over to him and says he's going to clean off the cut, but if he screams or makes any noise that he's going to be killed by Carson. With that, he takes the covers off, and then Tom starts to tell Reed that he is as bad as Fayed, and he also tells him that he was against him from the beginning, and then Reed is, quote, very disappointed. Melinda calls Reed, and then he just covers up the mouth again so that Tom can't make any noises in the background. And he tells her that they just finished the briefing and Tom should be there in a few minutes. Carson says he's almost done, and in about a minute he is. The bomb is the tape recorder that Secret Service found earlier. He tells Reed that the code to the bomb is 624 and then hit enter. The kill radius is 10 feet, so they both have to be close if they want to kill them. On the way to the speech room, Reed sees many officials, and it was kind of weird how they made the music all tense, but nothing really happened. Reed walks up to the podium and asks the two people there if he could have a minute with it, sticks the tape recorder under the podium, and he struggled while he was trying to get it out of his pocket. But he eventually got it. Assad tells Wayne that he appreciates that Wayne is taking a risk. A very short conversation follows that, and then Assad takes the podium. Wayne then tells Reed that he has been trying to reach Tom for an hour, and if there was anything he needed to know. He was not worried about Tom being kidnapped. He was worried about Tom's support of Wayne's actions, but that all ended up with Tom saying that he's going to go check on Tom, but he really goes outside to arm the bomb. On the podium, Assad notices some orange liquid dripping out of the podium, and with a few seconds left, he yells bomb, and when he gets just about 10 to 12 feet away, the bomb explodes. Tom is outside, and he believes that Wayne is dead, but we hear alarms go off, and everyone from Secret Service rushes into the room. They find Wayne, and they say that I believe it was a Code 5. He is alive, and not very well, as is Assad. But with that, the episode ends, and I also noticed that they called the president Citadel, which is a little bit weird. With that, the episode came to an end. The most viewed post over the week was the one Nikopucci post, which is lame. And everyone's saying how nothing really happened that episode till the last few minutes, which is basically true. There was a little bit of information, but nothing really exciting. Oscar the Grouch claims that he dozed off 4 times, and thank God he was recording it. You know, I don't record it. I just go and buy it on iTunes Tuesday morning, which I love doing that. I actually have a friend who takes my iPod from me if I don't give it to him because he wants to watch 24, and he knows that I'll have it. So I guess they're pulling in a few new fans there. And also, Son of a Bench has a theory on what's happening. He says, quote, I'm thinking, does Philip Bauer really have enough clout to pull the strings on an American president? Remember when Logan was going to shoot himself because Graham told him to? That doesn't make sense. I theorize that Philip Bauer is a member of a secret organization called the Patriots. And these Patriots are kind of the ones pulling the strings, kind of like the Skull and Bone secret society. He took an oath to protect the country according to the Patriots' ideals, and that is why he killed Graham. He didn't kill Graham because he's an evil man, but because he had no choice. Charles Logan was a member, Henderson was a member, and the current vice president is a member. And then Oscar the Grouch says, awesome theory. I think that could be pretty close, not exact, but, you know. And other than that, there were very few posts. There was, of course, the Victoria's Secret that's sponsoring 24, which I found a little bit odd. But, you know, but I guess 24 has to make their money. There was, of course, the post by Two Guys Talking for their podcast for this week's episode being released. You can find them over at twoguystalking.com. And that's about it for today. So, we'll be back on next Thursday or Friday.